We'll call the Agriculture and Rural Development Policy and Finance Committee to order. We do not have a quorum yet, so we have a number of other committee meetings that are taking place. Members will be rolling in and out of here. I know that Ways and Means will be meeting here shortly as well. First of all, I'd like to welcome everybody to the Agriculture Committee. This is fantastic. We wait for days like this, right? We want to get as many people in here as we possibly can, and took Representative Anderson to do that for us. So, welcome, Sarah. Representative Anderson, it's so nice to see you as well. Friends, a little bit about today. What we're looking for, myself as a chair and also the members talking with them, this is an information-only hearing. All right, information only. And I understand that there's multiple sides, different sides to this issue. I ask that everybody please be respectful. Be respectful for individuals that have the opposing views. My mom always taught me, don't hate the opposition, but respect them, for they too are standing up for what they believe in, right? What we're looking for as legislators, like I said, is the facts, the information that you can bring to us. We're going to run a very, very tight schedule here today, and please respect us for that. There's a number of committee meetings going on. We have a number of people that have to be in multiple places as well. And so Ms. Harmon and Ms. Westrom did a wonderful job identifying who the testifiers are. In the event the person does speak before you, says what you're going to say, it's okay to forego your spot or simply say, I agree. And if there's any information you want to submit in writing, we will take that and make sure all the other committee members get that as well. Talking with security and whatnot, a few things here. There is an overflow room right across the hall in room number 5. It's audio only. So if it gets too hot in here, I'm told that they have the air turned up as high as they possibly can go. So if it gets too hot for somebody, you can go right into the next room right across the hallway and listen there. I'll let individuals know who the testifiers are, and we're going to begin with testifiers, starting with Representative Anderson in a minute and a half. For the first side of this, if you will, who are in support of the bill, we have Mr. Gary Wood, Ms. Carol Frisk, and Representative Anderson. I have here that you have 3 individuals that you've identified as well. We will begin that testimony here, and we are going to have... Okay. So, and those individuals identified by you, okay? Now, if I'll do my best to allow people time to speak, of course. If you go over, there's going to be a hard break on this thing. At 3:20, we are going to stop taking testimony on the support side of this bill. And we are going to move to testimony from individuals that have shown some concerns. And that's going to be a hard break, my friends. So be respectful when you're doing your testimony of other people's time that's testifying behind you. Because in the event you happen to go over, those individuals will not have the opportunity to say what's on their mind. They will have to submit that. They will have to submit that in writing. All right? Please, please, respect us on this. And the other thing here is that we also have Representative Bruce Anderson, who has taken up another bill, and we were going to start that promptly at 3:50. At 3:50. Please refrain from clapping, cheering, no signs, and cell phones. Please turn your cell phones on silent. Otherwise, there's a kitty around here who will charge you $5 if it goes off. So with that, Representative Anderson, welcome to the Ag Committee. We appreciate you being here, and to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to extend a thank you to you as well for coming today to hear about this important issue. You know, many of you know me as a suburban legislator. I represent the areas of Plymouth and Medicine Lake. But my roots are actually from greater Minnesota. I grew up around the Wilmer area, Atwater, if you know where that's at, central Minnesota. And I grew up on a dairy farm. And I was the youngest of 13 children, and we all drank raw milk, every single one of us. And in fact, when my brothers took over the farm from my dad, all of them and their 13, it was 13 of them as a family overall, they as well all drank raw milk. And so I know the benefits firsthand of raw milk and what it can do for you, and it's a great way to grow up. And I also came from a family that was very dedicated to promotion of the dairy industry overall. My mother served for years as the chair of the American Dairy Association. I myself was a former dairy princess too, and along with several of my sisters. So we were very much raised in the idea of trying to do our best to promote dairy across the state of Minnesota, and I value that very highly. Members, too, that's basically what this bill is about today, and it's about promoting dairy consumption within the state of Minnesota. We are asking to give consumers greater freedom in choosing to drink raw milk. So that's what this bill is about. We currently have, across the nation, 10 states that allow for the retail sale of milk. 15 states allow farm sales of raw milk. 4 states allowed herd shares of milk. So we already have a good example of other states that do this. You know, in Minnesota, that it is currently legal for you to purchase raw milk. The only difference is that you have to go to the farm site itself to purchase raw milk. And what we're asking here today is to allow the citizens to access raw milk through either through farmers markets, farm stands, and direct delivery to their home. We're not asking that you put it in grocery stores. This is just simply farmers markets and things of that nature.
Representative Anderson, just for the record, 247, we do have a quorum.
Members, this issue was first brought to me by a couple of constituents. I have one with me here today. It was something I hadn't thought about since I was a kid growing up and drinking raw milk, but they brought it to my attention, and that is the main impetus for me for being here today, is to represent their views and their freedom to choose what they want to consume, but for both them and their families. And it's not just folks that are interested in having the freedom of choice to purchase raw milk. There are many supporters of this bill, anywhere that range anywhere from folks that like the health benefits of raw milk. There are foodies that enjoy raw milk. You can make some fabulous cheese and yogurt, and I can tell you all your recipes from those old church cookbooks turn out a lot better when you've got raw milk that you're using too. And then there's also those folks that just want to be able to buy homegrown products that are made right here in the state of Minnesota. And I know as the Ag Committee, that's one of your priorities as well. And then last but not least, there are farmers out there that see this as a tool of promoting dairy consumption within the state of Minnesota in a new and different way. So that's kind of all of the different groups that you have that came together here today to support this. As you can see, a large contingency of them are here today. Some of them had to actually leave because of session overrun and having children that they wanted to be able to take care of. So with that, members, I just want to turn it over here to, I'm going to have my two constituents that brought this issue to me. This is Dawn Olson, and she just wants to speak to why raw milk is important to her.
Please state your name for the record and begin.
My name is Dawn Olson, and as Sarah said, I am a constituent in her district, and I contacted her about a year ago regarding the raw milk issue and having more access to it. My family and I have been drinking it for a few years. I have 3 children, and all of them consume it. We have found some great nutritional benefits from it. We've been healthy for the last 2 winters and 3 winters with no sicknesses, and I really attribute that to eating whole, healthy foods. And so I'm just asking you to consider making the access to that raw milk easier for us so that I don't have to load up my kids, drive 2 and 3 hours a week to go to a farm and get the milk and cheese that we consume. So that's all all I'm asking for.
Well, thank you for your testimony. And your children come today as well?
They did.
Yeah? So they're happy, they're healthy?
They are. Can you stand up?
Can they wave? All right. Very nice. Hey, your mom is awesome. She did a great job. Thank you so much for your testimony.
And Ms. Anderson. Mr. Chair, we have Carol Frisk that will come forward.
Okay. Welcome. You know what? Having kids in this committee is refreshing, isn't it? This is great. Please state your name for the record and begin, please.
My name is Carol Frisk, and I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to share why this bill is very imperative to the well-being of my family. This is my daughter, Bethany.
Hi, Bethany.
She's a little shy. For the first 3 years of her life, she was incredibly ill. She failed to thrive, was in and out of the hospital, and many physicians' offices to no avail. Sorry.
It's okay.
She was skin and bones. She had a large, bloated belly. Her ribs stood out under her skin, and she had dark circles under her eyes. She was a horribly sad child who often lashed out in compulsive and inappropriate ways. She hated to eat. She complained it hurt her and caused her great pain. We were once told by a pediatrician that she was starving to death, but no one could tell us why. Thankfully, a friend suggested to me that my sick daughter might be helped by drinking raw milk. I had not even heard of raw milk previously, but I began to research what raw milk is. I am degreed in microbiology and biochemistry, and I had worked in the pharmaceutical industry. So poring over the articles and information was easy for me to do, and I concluded that raw milk from a clean source where the cows eat grass, breathe fresh air, and exercise in the sunshine, milked by conscientious farmers, is actually safer to drink than most pasteurized milk. I also learned that thousands of people had dramatic recoveries from chronic illnesses once they added raw milk into their diet, and many of those individuals had chronic gut issues just like my daughter. Now, we all know that there's areas of medicine for which there is not a consensus, and diet and gut health is certainly one of them. I began to understand the incredible damage we had caused by my diet prenatally, by vaccines which alter gut flora, and the plethora of antibiotics we had allowed her to take. There are likely environmental contributors as well, but it became clear to me she was suffering from a serious intestinal imbalance that could not be addressed through conventional medicine and the standard American diet. So we added raw milk into her diet, and much to our astonishment, for the first time, she was able to consistently eat something with no gastrointestinal consequences. That was the beginning of her improved health, and we have been drinking raw milk ever since. And as you can see, she is now completely healthy. She's 8 years old, she has a lot of meat on her bones, and she's a joy to have as a daughter. And she loves to eat now, don't you? Although not to the same extent as my daughter, the whole family has benefited in improved health from raw dairy. Therefore, it is critically important for me to be able to provide this to my family. However, the current law inhibits me from being able to provide this crucial food for my family. I have a rare genetic disorder called mitochondrial myopathy, and it results in extreme fatigue, and for me, my right leg is weak, and it prevents me from driving any kind of distances. Metro mobility will not drive me out of the city to the farm to get my milk. The current law is written such that the farmer cannot legally bring the product to me. This law, therefore, is catastrophic to my family. The law discriminates against me because it prevents me from having equal access to a product that an unrestricted driver can obtain, leaving me unable to provide my daughter with the food she desperately needs. My hope is that this legislature will defend my family and allow us simply to have the freedom to have access to this basic food of milk. And I'm happy to answer any questions if I'm able to.
So, Bethany, you're a beautiful little girl. Is that your little brother? Yeah. Is he a good boy? Yeah. So, you brought up mitochondrial. I'm chief author of a bill to bring awareness to that disease as well. So, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, thank you for coming today. And I grew up on a farm and drank raw milk, too, up until I was in college, I guess. But in your testimony, you mentioned getting your milk from a clean source, and that's very important. If we expand this sale opportunity, how do we ensure, in your mind, being able to guarantee a clean source for milk. Ms. Frisk.
Well, I'm just a mom with a family, and I'm sure what I'm going to say doesn't represent all of the people in this room and all the hundreds of people who couldn't come. I love having access directly to my farmer. My farmers are my friends. I'm invited to their farm anytime I want. I can go unannounced and visit them. I see what they do. So a lot of the beauty of the situation is that I have that personal relationship and I know what's going on in that farm. I trust my farmers. And it's really about that relationship and each person making that their own individual decision.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Sure. Appreciate that. Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I've got Paul Reese.
Okay. Please make your way to the podium. Make your way up front. And members, I think on questions, if we can hold questions to the end so we can work on getting testifiers in, that'd be great. Mr. Reese, please state your name for the record and begin.
My name is Paul Reese. Thanks for having this hearing. Chairman Hamilton, it's good to see you again.
Likewise.
I am a dairy farmer in southeastern Minnesota. I'm fourth generation there on that farm. The only reason we milk cows is because my wife and I want raw milk. It's that simple. And we do have friends that do come to the farm to pick up milk, so we aren't the only ones drinking our milk. So I do on some level expect some sort of retaliatory action from the Department of Agriculture later because of this. I'm sorry I don't have a script for you. I wrote this while I was on the tractor.
Mr. Reese, we like that better.
All right. When my father bought the farm from his father in 1965, he paid $200 an acre for that farm. And that was the standard rate. He was getting $3 a hundredweight for his milk, or about 25 cents per gallon. Now, in 2011, agricultural land in our area is valued at around $6,000. Commodity milk is maybe a dollar and a quarter, $1.50, depending on your premiums. Probably the highest price I've heard is about $30 per hundredweight for organic, certified organic, really premium grass-fed milk. By way of comparison, now it would in 1965 it would cost you 800 gallons of milk to buy an acre of land. 2011, if you are certified organic, grass-fed, getting about as much as you can get for your milk, it would take 2,400 gallons to buy an acre of land. If you wanted a new pickup truck, 1965, you'd get a pretty nice truck for $2,000. So that was about 8,000 gallons of milk. Now in 2011, you don't get much for $30,000. It would take 12,000 gallons of milk. The trend is definitely going in the wrong direction here. The kind of the fair price in today's dollars would be about $7.50 per gallon wholesale to the farmer, commodity milk. The only way consumers are going to support that kind of a fair price to the farmer is if they can pay it directly. If it had to go through the retail chains to get to the consumer, you're looking at $15 a gallon for just commodity grade milk. So there's a jobs component there, for sure. We have now, with the small farmers being chased out by the economic climate, we have, instead of 100 producers with 40 cows doing a good job knowing their cows by name, the operators know instantly if the cow is not feeling well or if there's some kind of problem. Now we have one operator operating 4,000 cows with hired work that really doesn't care about the health of the cows as long as they get that paycheck. To answer your question about ensuring the safety of the milk, any customer, any raw milk customer can have that milk tested at any time. And if there is a problem, you will know immediately where that problem came from. And within 12 hours, you could have that problem traced back to the individual cow. Now, can the commercial industry make that claim? 100% transparency and 12-hour trace back to the individual cow. I think you can't fix perfection, so why try? This bill is unique because we're not asking the government to do anything for us. The bill is unique because this is a group of people that wants to take on responsibility. This bill will not cost the state one additional dime. Thanks. I've taken enough time.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. Those numbers that you had, do you feel comfortable providing a copy of that for me as well, that you laid out for us?
You probably can't read my handwriting, so I'll have to email it to you.
If you get time, if you could just submit that via email or something, that'd be great. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I'd like to call Catherine Johnson.
Okay. So, Ms. Johnson? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin.
My name is Catherine Nicholas Johnson. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm a licensed registered nurse and I work as a natural health educator. I have experience in both public health and occupational health, and I've studied natural therapies and nutrition for over 25 years. I am also a raw milk consumer. I am here to impress upon you the importance of convenient access to raw milk, even though my income does not depend on the passage of this bill. I am in the business, though, of changing paradigms, and if need be, I hope to change some of yours today on the issue of raw milk. Over the years, as a healthcare professional, I observed that milk, which has nourished people for generations, was being poorly tolerated by some people, and associated with health problems such as ear infections, asthma, eczema, constipation, etc. I set out on a mission to find out why. What I concluded is that our commercially available milk is a processed food. I then began copious research into the alternative, raw milk, and became convinced of what I call its grand design. For instance, raw milk never spoils. It does not require refrigeration. You can even keep it on the counter. This sour milk is easily digested and historically has been used to nourish invalids. I have even used raw milk myself that was at least 3 months old. And let me tell you, it makes fabulous pancakes, cornbread, and biscuits. I need to make it clear, though, that this does not apply to pasteurized milk, which instead does spoil. So don't try this at home unless you have the right stuff. I also reiterate that the vast majority of people, well, I also want to, another interesting fact is that the vast majority of people, even those actually diagnosed by an MD with lactose intolerance, can drink raw milk without symptoms. And the most pleasant surprise, I think, is that when cows are fed the ideal diet of grass as nature intended, raw milk is loaded with important nutrients that are easily used by the body, and most are found in the fat. I personally used raw butter and raw cream to recover from adrenal fatigue. Even though this product is legally available for purchase at the farm, I hear the concern regarding expanding access to raw milk is safety. My own family has consumed raw milk for nearly 10 years from several different sources with no experience of foodborne illness. I attribute this in part to the built-in protective mechanisms that are found in raw milk. I am connected with many raw milk drinkers, and I don't know of anyone who has ever gotten sick from it. In fact, I attended an international raw milk symposium last weekend where a retired pathologist who has studied the safety of raw milk extensively stated, "It is irresponsible to consider raw milk inherently dangerous." In conclusion, raw milk is just a normal, wholesome, natural food. Many of you, I know, were fortunate to grow up on a farm here in Minnesota and are familiar with it. And raw milk drinkers are a community of educated people who care about their health. The public health benefits of raw milk far outweigh any public health concern. In this day of astronomical medical costs, we need to make it more conveniently accessible to every Minnesotan who makes the decision to consume it. I ask for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. You talked about a symposium and a pathologist. Could you provide the committee or get to us the name of the individual and the information, and if they have a website on the topics that were discussed there and the information provided? Could you do that for us?
Absolutely. It would be my pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Johnson, for your testimony. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I've got Gary Wood.
Okay. So that was Mr. Wood, Gary Wood. You make your way up front, please. And he may be in the other room.
He's coming.
Okay. Right. Give him some time to get down here. Can't believe how good all the kids are.
While we're waiting for him, Mr. Yes. Chair, we could perhaps have Amanda come forward.
Okay. Please state your name for the record and begin. And you didn't have to dress up for us.
No.
Yeah, we're just a bunch of farmers here.
Right. Okay? My name is Amanda Muehlbauer, and I've been disabled by RA. I'm 21 years old, and I'm a math student at the University of Minnesota. 7 months ago, I had to withdraw from school due to severe rheumatoid arthritis pain in my feet, hands, and shoulders. With every step I took, it felt like I was walking on glass shards, and all of the tendons in my feet were about to snap. I spent the next several months completely bedridden. Most people with RA use very powerful medications. After a five-minute Google search on the side effects of RA meds, I decided that was not for me. Through research, I learned that the Mayo Clinic historically used raw milk to treat diseases, including arthritis. Through the nutritional and healing properties of raw milk and raw milk products, I've recovered enough to re-enroll at the university this fall. 7 months ago, it would have been completely impossible for me to come to the Capitol to speak with you, much less make a four-hour round-trip drive to the farm. This bill is extremely important to me and others who are too disabled to drive out to the farm to pick up their milk. Please help me have easier access to raw dairy by supporting this bill. Thanks.
So, Ms. Muehlbauer, is that right?
Yep.
So, you're attending the University of Minnesota?
Yep.
All right, you ever run into my son there? I'm just kidding. So, yeah. I'm just teasing. I digress. I'm sorry, members. So, but you are, your testimony, you're saying through the consumption of raw milk, you're feeling much better, and you attribute it to that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm not on any other pharmaceutical drugs or anything. So everything, all of the progress that I've made, we've attributed to my diet.
Okay. And I, too, doctor at the Mayo Clinic, and you said you researched the Mayo site. Could you provide me that information as well, where you went to find that information? And I'd be interested in reading up on that as well.
Okay.
Would you do that, please? Okay. Thank you so much for your testimony. If my son steps out of line at the U, let me know, all right? Thank you so much. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, if Gary Wood has come forward.
Mr. Wood. Is Mr. Wood in the room?
And if not, I have some closing remarks, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Anderson, I do have a question. I work in agriculture, right? Livestock. And one of our biggest fears, and one of the things that we stress, put a strong emphasis on, is biosecurity measures, emerging diseases and biosecurity measures. We limit foot traffic out to the farm. It is very high health. And my concern is, and I was wondering if you have a testifier, or if there is somebody that could talk. We do have a few minutes. Your testifiers did a wonderful job. If somebody could speak to the biosecurity threats of having multiple people come and visit the farm.
Well, Mr. Chair, if there is anybody in the audience that would like to speak to that, that would be wonderful. But I concur with you as far as that issue goes. I know with my family farm, having grown up on a dairy farm, we got very nervous when people wanted to visit our facility and wanted to walk through the barn, because whatever they had been at a different farm with their shoes, they could be transporting any of those diseases. And I think that speaks to the whole concern of why we need to make it accessible, raw milk accessible for delivery to people's homes or at farmers markets, farm fairs, and things of that nature, because it helps to eliminate that threat. We've had some serious concerns and scares with that issue in recent history. So that is a concern. But I don't know if there's anybody else that wants to, maybe Mr. Reese wants to speak to that at all.
Mr. Reese.
I'm sorry, I was in the hall. What was the question?
My question has to do with biosecurity. I said I'm in agriculture, livestock specifically, and we put a strong emphasis on biosecurity. One of the biggest threats are emerging diseases. We run very high health herds and strict biosecurity measures. The question that I have on biosecurity with having the foot traffic, the amount of people coming specifically to the farm, what type of threat does that, what type of threat is that to the raw milk producers with having that amount of traffic coming to the farm?
I would say virtually none.
Okay.
First of all, people from the suburbs don't necessarily like to walk around in the pastures to begin with.
Okay.
Second of all, I don't feed any grain to my cows, and that's by choice. There was a study done by, I believe it was Cornell University. It's posted on the website eatwild.com. What they discovered was the really bad bugs, like the 0157H7.
E. coli.
Yeah, it's kind of a creation of our modern high-density feedlots. The pH in the rumen has been changed because the corn. So then the E. coli will actually evolve to be resistant to the stomach acids. Whereas if a grass-fed animal with a neutral pH would pass E. coli on through, you know, sanitation or whatnot into the milk, the E. coli is not used to the acidic digestive system of human beings. So what they found is that it's virtually impossible for a grass-fed animal to transmit disease to the human digestive tract.
Okay.
Go off track?
No, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Anderson is the other testifier.
I don't believe so, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So, any questions from members? Yes. Yes. Representative Anderson, we can take questions for 7 minutes.
Thanks.
Or less.
Chairman, again, I do have a couple of questions. Ms. Johnson, I think, was talking, and the difference between sour and spoiled milk, and then also if the milk does not need refrigeration. That would interest me a lot, if that's the case.
Well, I agree. It's a very interesting thing. It was kind of difficult for me to wrap my head around at first, too, because I grew up in the age of refrigeration and didn't know anything about, you know, raw milk. But I guess the way I would explain it is that raw milk sours into something that is more like yogurt. And pasteurized milk, the reason I say it spoils is because it actually rots. And as long as you can get your taste buds to, you know, a lot of people like raw milk or sour milk, and actually even think that there are even more health benefits because the sugar has been fermented out of it, and that it's sort of like the original probiotic, which is a big buzzword, you know, these days. And so as long as you can, you know, get used to the taste or have been used to the taste, then it's sour but still pleasant. But pasteurized milk, you know, once it gets, you know, too old, is past its shelf life, is unpleasant and, you know, inedible.
Representative Anderson, follow up.
Yeah, okay. So are you saying that you could leave this on on your kitchen cupboard for a couple of weeks unrefrigerated and still drink it safely?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some people do that purposely. May get their raw milk, which has been kept under, you know, refrigerated conditions so that it's fresh and sweet tasting. But maybe they want to make something. Maybe they need some way to make some fermented vegetables or, you know, something else that they want to make. And so then what you would do is you would set it out on the counter, and it would separate into curds and whey, just like Little Miss Muffet ate.
Representative Anderson, follow-up.
One more follow-up. Are we talking about a specific type of dairy operation that has to be grass-fed, or could what I'd call a typical dairy that feeds their cows grain, would their milk be the same as milk from a grass-fed cow?
Ms. Johnson.
Well, that was something else that was addressed by Sally Fallon of the Weston A. Price Foundation last weekend at this raw milk symposium that I attended. And her recommendation is that if it's a clean source, if the milk is clean, then any raw milk, it has health benefits. Now, my personal opinion is that you're going to get more health benefits from a cow that's been raised on healthy soil. The cow is healthy. It's eating, you know, green grass out on pasture in the sunshine. It's, you know, the milk is handled by healthy people. And so you're going to have a lot more benefit from it. For instance, milk from cows that are fed green grass has something in it called conjugated linoleic acid, which is considered a cancer preventive. So, you know, there are going to be all these, you know, benefits that you may or may not, you know, realize that you're getting. And I think the other nice thing is that if the milk is produced under ideal conditions, then I think the benefits go up and any safety risk that might be present goes down. So, you know, it would be my preference to not only have clean milk, but for it to be grass-fed.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. We have Representative Schimanski and Representative Ward. I'm going to remind everybody we're going to take a hard break at 20 after. Representative
Thank
Schimanski.
Mr. Chairman. I'll keep this brief. Representative Paul Anderson kind of touched on my question, and that is for the consumers of raw milk, do you have a preference in terms of what the cattle are fed? You know, do you research the farmers to see, you know, are they feeding grains and concentrates or are they organically fed? Yeah, are those concerns for the raw milk consumers?
Representative Anderson, we'd like to take that, or Ms. Johnson?
Well, Ms. Johnson, if you want to address that, and I don't know if Ms. Frisk or Ms. Olson want to address that either.
Okay. So, Ms. Johnson, do you feel comfortable fielding that, or we can call up Ms. Olson? Ms. Olson, the question is, do you research what the cattle eat before you, right, Representative Schimanski? Do you research the diet of the cattle before you purchase the raw milk?
Yes, I do. I make sure, you know, I would never just buy my raw milk from someone I didn't know or didn't go out and visit their farm and feel 100% comfortable with what that farm looked like, what the cattle were eating. I do only get grass-fed raw milk. Same with my beef. I'm pretty particular about that. So I personally would know my farmer, know what they're doing on the farm and what they're feeding the animals.
Thank you. And Ms. Frisk, just a yes, you research that as well?
I do.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to make a quick question, Representative Anderson, ask a quick question. And I, you know, Ms. Olson and some folks have been in my office visiting with me about the raw milk issue, and they've been all respectful and answered my questions. And I guess my main question is, you know, we've been doing pasteurization for, I don't know, 75, 80 years, and there's a reason why we did that. I'm assuming because of illness caused in our society. So my question would be, you know, you stated you were a raw milk drinker forever, and what, you know, as I've done my research and looked at some of the effects of, I think the gentleman called E. coli 157H7, I think it was what it was. I mean, it had some tremendous negative impacts on especially children, kidney failure and things as such. So tell me this. You know, what are we going to do when, you know, one of the testifiers said this isn't going to cost the state a penny, but if we have more outbreaks, it is going to cost the state So, you know, what kind of concerns or what kind of safeguards do we have to make sure that there are no more outbreaks of, you know, pretty significant severe illness to our children?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Ward. In your packet today, you should have received a folder that contains some good data about different outbreaks that we've had, both from pasteurized milk and also raw milk. And, you know, it can happen with pasteurized milk. We've seen it happen with vegetables that have been on the market. That's just a risk of consuming food in general. And I think when you are looking at this issue, we have currently 10 states that allow for the sale of raw milk on a retail level. On top of that, we have 15 states that allow for farm sales of raw milk, just like Minnesota does. And Minnesota has been doing this for 60 years. And I don't know about you, but I can't remember over the last 60 years any major outbreak that we've had that did a mass group of people from raw milk consumption. And I can only speak as well to my own personal experience. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm the youngest of 13 children, all 13 kids consuming raw milk every single day of our life, you know, up and through my college years. And once I left college, I had the hard reality of having to buy milk from the grocery store. And boy, that's a rude awakening, folks, when you go from the real stuff to the skim stuff. That's difference of night and day. So, you know, I can only speak to my own experience and the fact that I never once ever got sick from raw milk, nor did anybody else in my family, nor did my brother's families get sick, or all the countless folks that in my area where you grow up, everybody drinks the milk straight from the tank. So I can only speak to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Ward. We are going to move to the testifiers that have concerns, Representative Anderson. And the first person I'll call up is the commissioner. Commissioner Fredrickson. As he's making his way, I want to thank the individuals for their testimony. Thank you so much. The information that we asked for, if you'd please follow through and provide us with that. We'll make sure that every member receives that serves on this committee, and it will be read. I assure you that I will read it. Thank you so much for your testimony. I want to thank the people who oppose the testifiers up here for being very respectful and very courteous while they presented their testimony. And I ask that we return the favor as well if we support this bill and we don't agree with the testimony that's going to be provided here, that we also respect their testimony as well. With that, Commissioner, welcome. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dave Fredrickson, the Commissioner of Agriculture here in Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to come over and share some thoughts as it relates to this particular piece of legislation. Our mission, Mr. Chairman and members, is purely to protect the integrity of the food supply, and it's certainly at the core of our mission at the Department of Agriculture. Minnesotans trust us to carry out this mission effectively and fairly using the best information available. We honor that trust by taking our responsibility very seriously. Our regulatory work is based on quality science, reinforced by close partnerships with Minnesota Department of Health and other agencies. We are proud that our food safety work is praised nationally as a model. Our scientists were the first in the country to determine that peanut butter from Georgia was behind a nationwide outbreak of salmonella in 2009. Our scientists were among the first in the country to determine the jalapeno peppers were behind the multi-state outbreak of salmonella poisoning in 2008. The Center for Science and the Public Interest recently released a report grading the performance of all 50 states on food safety protection. Not only was Minnesota one of the seven states to earn an A, we were used as the gold standard by which other states were judged. Minnesota earned this outstanding reputation by employing some of the world's finest food safety experts and public health scientists. Our nationally respected scientists tell us pasteurization is a vital public health measure and that unpasteurized milk presents a serious public health risk. This position is supported by a long list of respected public health organizations that include the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Veterinary Medical Association. I respect consumer choice, but this isn't simply a matter of having too much salt in or on your French fries. Infections with bacteria like E. coli 015787 or salmonella can lead to major health impacts. Looking over our statutes authorizing our food safety work, there is absolutely no reference to buyer beware. Most dairy farmers oppose changing current law because they realize more consumption of unpasteurized milk will lead to more illness and more negative headlines for dairy products. Our dairy sector is showing signs of recovery, but I can't imagine a better way to undermine farmers than by eroding their greatest asset, and that is the trust they have built up among consumers. Some people will continue to drink unpasteurized milk despite the risks, and Minnesota's current law certainly allows them to make that choice, all but with some basic safeguards that make it more likely they are informed about the risks they are assuming. Our recent experience leads me to believe that even our current law fails to provide sufficient safeguards. However, it does offer some balance between protecting public health and allowing the consumption of unpasteurized milk. We have at the department grave concerns about any attempt to remove these very basic safeguards that are now in place. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd be pleased to stand for any questions.
Okay. Commissioner, out of respect, I think we're going to hold questions to the end.
Sure.
For additional testifiers so we can work them in as well. Appreciate your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to call up next. I believe we'd like to go next. Please state your name for the record and who you represent and begin, please.
Chairman Hamilton and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Ed Ellinger. I'm a pediatrician and Commissioner of Health for the Minnesota Department of Health.
Welcome.
As part of my testimony, I would like to start by showing a video about a California child who became gravely ill from consuming raw milk.
And can folks in the audience see this as well? Is it coming up? Okay. And Commissioner, this video is about how long?
It's about 3.5 minutes.
3.5 minutes, okay.
Mary McGonigal Martin from California is the kind of mom who does her homework. Searching for a healthier way to provide dairy for her 7-year-old son, she considered raw milk. A little research convinced her that a particular brand of raw milk, which was tested by the farmer, was deemed safe, so she bought some for her son.
I was lulled into a false sense of safety. So in my mind, if the milk was tested, and they've never found a pathogen in this milk, and he'd been in business for 4 years and they tested it, then how could it possibly have a pathogen? In the first 2 weeks, I bought a quart just to see, did he like it? The third batch that we bought was the one that was contaminated with E. coli.
After drinking the contaminated raw milk, her son became ill, and then his condition quickly deteriorated. Her son was diagnosed with hemolytic uremic syndrome, or HUS, a complication caused by an E. coli infection. Mary went from being the mother of a child with diarrhea and vomiting to the mother of a child who was in kidney failure and needed dialysis. Over the next 2 months, he was admitted to 3 different hospitals as healthcare providers worked to save his life.
And we put him on dialysis, and we put him on a ventilator that he wasn't going to make it on his own, and he had congestive heart failure, and that he would die without this. And I become emotional because truly I thought he was going to die at that moment. I thought that was it. He can't, he's fought for so long, he has nothing left in him. So actually, the ventilator was the greatest gift because his body could rest, and it did the breathing for him.
Health problems associated with an E. coli infection don't always end once a person leaves the hospital.
It's been 3 years and he's a very, I would say this is the first year that I would say life is pretty normal and typical, and we just have the normal worries that all parents do about their fifth grade son, what goes on in fifth grade.
After watching her son battle for his life, Mary began to truly understand the risks of drinking raw milk.
The risk from drinking raw milk isn't a tummy ache for a few days or diarrhea and vomiting that goes away. The risk is that the pathogen could kill you.
Mary chose to buy raw milk because she had read about its benefits. After reflecting on her raw milk research, Mary believes that the risks weren't communicated.
I didn't think about that at the time, of where's the information about the risks. And maybe that just sounds so naive. I didn't think to look for that, because all the information just talks about all the positives. And so in my mind, when they tested the milk, I thought that covered it. Raw milk is safe if there's not a pathogen, but the chance of it having a pathogen, the risk is so huge it doesn't outweigh the benefits of making that choice for your family. That's just my opinion after having lived the other end.
I use this video first because I've treated multiple cases of hemolytic uremic syndrome and have seen the problems that it's caused, the major disease that it is. I also use it because it highlights some of the concerns that we have about increasing access to raw milk. First, raw or unpasteurized milk, no matter how carefully produced, is inherently unsafe. The only way to ensure destruction of the harmful pathogens found in raw milk is to thoroughly use pasteurization, a process that is one of the most important public health advances of the 20th century. Raw milk has been frequently associated with outbreaks of foodborne illness. Nationally, in a 10-year period, there were 86 outbreaks due to raw milk or raw milk products. Increasing, more importantly, there were in more outbreaks in states that had looser regulations related to raw milk. And these have resulted in over 1,600 documented illnesses, 191 hospitalizations, and 2 deaths. Here in Minnesota, we have investigated 10 outbreaks associated with raw milk since 1980. In addition to these outbreaks, just during the 2001 to 2009 period, almost 500 people with laboratory-confirmed infections reported drinking raw milk before becoming ill, and 13% were hospitalized. We also know that some people who become ill do not seek medical care, and most do not seek medical care, who do seek medical care are not tested. Therefore, the number of affected persons is likely much larger. We estimate that more than 1,800 Minnesotans become sick each year from drinking raw milk. Second, drinking raw milk can have serious consequences, including increased health care costs, severe illness, and even death. Several years ago, an 11-month-old Minnesota child died from a severe complication called hemolytic uremic syndrome, as you saw in the video. This causes kidney failure, and this was caused by raw milk. The child in the video I showed you had HUS. Children with HUS require dialysis, blood transfusion. 6% of HUS cases are fatal. Even those who recover have to cope with long-term health issues. Last year, there were 17 HUS cases in Minnesota. 3 of these were in children who became ill after drinking raw milk. These children are hospitalized for a combined total of 34 days. All 3 required blood transfusions and required dialysis. These children are now at a much higher risk for lifelong serious health issues. Complications from raw milk-associated illness also include miscarriage, stillbirth, severe disease in newborns, arthritis, and a polio-like condition with an onset of paralysis. Third, many people who become ill from raw milk, including children, report being given raw milk at the homes of neighbors, friends, or extended family members. These individuals were often not aware that they were drinking unpasteurized milk. The current law, which enables purchase of raw milk at dairy farms, encourages customers to observe the farm conditions, as you heard from some of these people who testified before me. Furthermore, the effort required a visit to the farm increases the likelihood that the risks will be considered beforehand. We frequently find illness due to raw milk in consumers who have not had a chance to fully consider the risk. Expanded access, as proposed, will mean that more people will make the choice to consume raw milk and become ill without knowing the full risks of doing so. Fourth, pasteurization of milk is a safe, effective public health policy supported by the Minnesota legislature for almost 3/4 of a century. In 1938, milk products were the source of 25% of all food and waterborne illnesses that were traced to sources, but now they account for less than 1% of all food and waterborne illnesses. Raw milk supporters claim that raw milk is more nutritious and has more health benefits than pasteurized milk, and that raw milk is inherently antimicrobial, so pasteurization isn't needed. There is absolutely no scientific evidence to support these claims. Furthermore, the process of pasteurization has never been found to be the cause of chronic diseases, allergies, or developmental or behavior problems. Advancement in clean water supplies, public health and hygiene, and pasteurization of milk are largely responsible for the general state of healthy living conditions we have grown to expect in the United States in the 21st century. The Minnesota Department of Health's mission is to protect, maintain, and improve the health of all Minnesotans. We strongly oppose expansion of the current law to increase access to raw milk. Additionally, the proposed labeling requirements do nothing to warn consumers of the serious risk inherent in the product they are considering consuming. We should not allow one child to unnecessarily suffer from hemolytic uremic syndrome or die from consumption of raw milk because he took a step back from close to a century of work of public health to protect the health of all Minnesotans. Thank you, Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Commissioner, the risks have been studied. Have the benefits been studied? You heard the testimony here by the individuals that are for the bill talking about the benefits. Has the state or anybody, third party universities, studied the benefits of raw milk?
There have been numerous studies of raw milk, and there have been shown to be no additional benefits to raw milk over pasteurized milk.
Thank you for your testimony. And members, Representative Purcell, we're trying to hold questions at the end to get the testifiers through here, if that's okay. If you got to go, you want for the commissioner? Okay, what we'll do, Representative Purcell, is go ahead and ask your question. That testifier did take some additional time. I'm going to remind everybody, we're taking a hard break at 3:50, and we're moving on to Representative Bruce Anderson's bill. So, Representative Purcell.
Thanks for your indulgence, Mr. Chair, to the commissioner, if you would. I'll try and keep it brief here. If I heard you right, you talked about 7 cases, I think you said last year, of hemolytic uremic syndrome in Minnesota. I hope I heard that right. And then that 3 of those were report from individuals that reported consuming raw milk. What were the other 4? Do we know,
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, hemolytic uremic syndrome has multiple causes. E. coli 0157H7 is one of the major causes of hemolytic uremic syndrome. There are other multiple causes, but having 3 of these 17 cases directly associated with raw milk raises that as one of the major causes of hemolytic uremic syndrome in this state.
Just quickly, I'm not trying to prolong this. Do we know the source of the bacteria or whatever caused those other?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have some of our epidemiologists here who might be able to answer that question. I know we investigate all of the hemolytic uremic syndrome, so we do have that, and I could actually get that to you after this.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm going to move to testimony, Mr. Ward. And Mr. Ward, I see that. Not Representative Ward, Mr. Ward. I have too much respect for you, my friend. You're my Representative Ward. Mr. Ward, like I said, a hard break at 3:50. We're given the same amount of time on both sides of this issue, so help me navigate through the testifiers on your side as well.
Okay, thank you. And I've got a memo for the members, and I won't repeat the memo. I'll just go through a couple of the brief reasons for our opposition to this bill. Number one, I'm with the Cooperative Network, the Trade Association for Cooperatives in Minnesota, and the majority of milk in Minnesota is marketed through a cooperative, so the health and safety reputation of Minnesota's milk supply is very important to our cooperative members. Being a cooperative, our opposition to this bill is based on, because we're a Democratic organization, is based on the votes of our members at our annual meeting. So our opposition is based on dairy producers and dairy plant managers and so on voicing their concerns about this expanding the sales of raw milk. Our chief concern on that is the health of the Minnesota dairy industry. We're concerned that if a video like we just saw was played on television, national television, the damage it could do to sales of dairy products in the state of Minnesota. One can only, you know, Mr. Chairman, your familiarity with the swine industry, what happened when swine flu broke out and what that did to the sales of pork products throughout the country. Pennsylvania's the extension feels that in Pennsylvania it cost them $50 a hog, the outbreak of H1N1. Wisconsin did a study, the University of Wisconsin did a study, a 1% drop in fluid milk consumption, just a 1% drop in fluid milk consumption would cost the dairy farmers in Wisconsin about $4 million a year. So that's our concerns are based on, we're afraid that the expanding the sales of raw milk could expand the potential for raw milk-related illnesses and the damage that would do to Minnesota's dairy economy. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ward, for your testimony. And members, I think everybody got the handout as well. Next, I'd like to call upon Minnesota Milk Producers President. Is Mr. Luneman here? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, who you represent for the record,
Pat
and begin.
Todd County Dairy Farmer and President of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Minnesota Milk Producers Association supports the existing law which allows for the occasional on-farm sale of raw milk. We at Minnesota Milk believe in order to reduce the significant risk of consuming raw milk, there must be a personal on-farm relationship with the dairy farmer so the consumer knows where the milk comes from, what containers the milk is transported away from the farm in, and what conditions the milk endures between the farm and the consumer's home. Minnesota Milk Producers Association does not support further liberalization of raw milk sales, as we agree with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the Center for Disease Control, and the recommendation that consumers only drink pasteurized milk. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have personal experience with pasteurization on my farm. We normally have between 60 and 80 dairy calves on whole cow's milk on our farm. We pasteurize all the milk that we feed to our calves, including the colostrum that is first fed when the calf is born, to provide immunity. Since we have started pasteurization, the health issues and mortality rates of our calves have plummeted. Our calves are healthier. We have significantly reduced use of supportive medicines, including antibiotics. Occasionally, we have had a problem with our pasteurizing machines. During those unfortunate events, we almost always have a two-week period of sick calves due to the exposure to harmful bacteria. This experience convinced me just over a year ago to switch my family to pasteurized milk. Plus, there are some new strains of bacteria, some of which were mentioned before, the E. coli 0157H7, that are far more vicious than bacteria we have experienced in the past. These bacteria are not just found in farms, they're everywhere around us. But as you heard before, they are capable of destroying a person's kidneys or other internal organs in just a few short days. We need to think about whether we want people that we love and care about having that unnecessary risk when technology is available to nearly eliminate that risk. Our food systems have made great strides in the last century. Pasteurization, refrigeration, modern transportation, and packaging have all made our food safer to consume. Let's not take our food safety back 100 years. Through modern technology, we have an incredibly safe food system. Let's work at the level we are at and strive to make our food supply even safer. Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks. I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. I apologize. Someone had their phone on, and that's why you're getting the feedback. Someone was receiving a phone call, so I apologize for that. Thank you for your testimony. I think what we'll do is we'll roll into the next testifier, save the questions for the end. And I'd like to call upon, we have members from Kemp's, Mr. Green and Mr. Is it Potoval? Is that right? Yeah, very nice. Please state your name for the record and begin, please.
My name is James B. Green, and I've been president and CEO of Kemp's for the past 19 years. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we appreciate this opportunity to testify this afternoon.
Welcome.
Kemp's operates five dairy facilities in Minnesota, and we employ almost 900 people. Most of our milk that we sell within Minnesota, the vast majority of the milk we sell within Minnesota, is locally produced. It's from cows based in Minnesota. I respectfully urge you to oppose any legislation to legalize the expansion of the sale of raw milk within the state of Minnesota based on the significant public health risk associated with the consumption of raw milk. I've spent my entire career, nearly 40 years, in the dairy industry, where a portion of that career was spent on a family dairy operation in central Pennsylvania. And whether I was working for a small company or a large company, I've been dedicated to promoting the nutrition and wholeness of dairy products and dedicated to safeguarding those same products from foodborne illness. Our main concern must be with public health, but we must also be concerned with the adverse publicity that an outbreak of foodborne illness from raw milk generates. A single case of illness even from a well-intentioned dairy farmer that has attributed the raw dairy products in the state of Minnesota, would likely have an adverse impact on consumer confidence in and consumption of healthful fluid milk products. The consuming public has become extremely sensitive to the outbreak of foodborne illness, where confidence in a food or a food group can quickly erode. Our own experience with foodborne illness at Kemp's underscores this point. A number of years ago, one of our co-packing suppliers had a salmonella-related product recall. And even though the recall only involved a small number of products with very limited household penetration, we were deluged with calls from concerned consumers. We brought in a large number of employees over the weekend to handle the deluge of calls from consumers who were afraid to drink the gallons of white milk in the refrigerator which had nothing to do with the recall. One mention of milk and foodborne illness in the same media story, and consumers become extremely alarmed and were afraid to serve the wholesome milk that was in the refrigerators. A food safety story does not just affect the product involved, it quickly becomes widespread. In addition, adverse publicity associated with raw milk resulting in a drop in consumer confidence can exacerbate an already difficult situation in the fluid milk industry. Our industry is deeply involved in a pitched battle for consumer loyalty considering consumers' beverage purchases, and there is every indication that we as an industry are losing that battle. The recession and the proliferation of alternative beverages have resulted in a decline in per capita consumption of fluid milk over the last 10 years in America by 8%, representing almost 2 gallons per woman, man, and child in America. While industry associations and individual companies work for a solution, our efforts cannot be compromised by any adverse publicity associated with a foodborne illness for a food industry already under duress. Legalizing the expansion of the sale of raw milk within the state of Minnesota is the wrong course of action. The potential negative impact on Minnesota's economy and to our per capita consumption of milk is just too great. Please help us protect the residents of our state and the health of our state's dairy industry by opposing this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Portoval, do you have anything to add to that? Or we're pushing up to the amount of time.
Yes.
There's going to be a couple members that will not testify. They'll have to submit theirs in writing. But if you'd like to add something, please, we'd like to hear from you.
Just quickly, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Vineet Podwal, and I'm the Director of Quality Assurance at Kemp's.
Welcome.
The issue of expanding the sale of raw milk is very personal to me because it goes against everything that I have learned and practiced in the dairy industry over the last 20 years. As the head of quality assurance at Kemp's, I am tasked with creating and implementing effective quality systems and processes to prevent food safety issues. At the center of any food safety program in the dairy industry, and certainly at Kemp's, is the understanding of concerns from pathogenic bacteria in raw milk. Pasteurization is considered the most critical step, and between the design requirements per the pasteurized milk ordinance and plant and regulatory scrutiny, it's one of the most robust quality processes in the food industry. The time and temperature combinations required to kill the most heat-resistant pathogenic bacteria have been established based on empirical data and sound science. The equipment has been engineered to include a flow diversion device in case of either a fall in temperature or a change in pressure, so as to prevent even a single drop of raw milk from ever contaminating pasteurized product. Additionally, every dairy plant has stringent controls to frequently check and record the necessary parameters to make sure that the system is effective. In fact, when Kemp's launched a customized food safety assurance program several years ago, the basic premise was that the established dairy processes do not have recalls, withdrawals, or food safety issues from the pasteurization process precisely because of this robust design, and more scrutiny needed to be placed on all subsequent steps to prevent post-pasteurization contamination. I believe that this bill takes us back to the Stone Age, or certainly back to the 19th century prior to the discovery of pasteurization process. I am reminded of my childhood growing up in India, where a significant portion of the milk is still delivered in cans by a milkman. Now, that milkman was delivering raw milk, but our family and all other families in our area knew that the first thing you did when you got the milk to your house was to boil it. And we did that to destroy the disease-causing bacteria and to increase the length of time we could keep the milk around. I really don't think it's your intention to have Minnesota families have to boil their milk to make sure it does not make them sick. the state and federal regulatory agencies, producers, processors, and equipment manufacturers, and educational and research institutions have worked tirelessly over the last 50 years to reduce food safety risks from the consumption of raw milk. And I believe that the passage of this bill is a huge step backwards in that regard. Thank you.
So, thank you. Mr. Potterville or Mr. Green, how many people did you say you employ, and how many in Minnesota?
900 in Minnesota, 1,300 total.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Thank you for your testimony. And Representative Anderson, final word? First of all, before that, I know there was a couple of members from the Department of Public Health. I apologize. We are going to hold firm on the time that we allowed, and I ask that you submit your testimony in writing. I will read it. I will make sure that the members receive that as well. Representative Anderson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I do appreciate the opportunity to present this bill to you today. I hope that it has given you some good information to consider as you go back to your home, to your districts, and look at this issue more closely. As you can see from the audience members that we have behind us, there are a lot of folks, consumers out there, that already consume raw milk. And they are just looking for the freedom to be able to purchase that, have it delivered directly to the home, purchase it at farmers markets, and so forth. When you had a couple of testifiers here talk about the economic concern that this would have, in your packet that you received today, it gives you some ideas of how that any outbreaks have impacted other states that currently allow for sale of raw milk in those states, and you'll see that it hasn't had a financial impact at all. The packet also contains some other information about the health benefits from raw milk. We had several testifiers speak to that, and I can only speak from my own personal experience having grown up, my entire family. My parents started milking cows in 1950, and throughout that time, not a single one of us got sick from raw milk. That's a lot of cows that went through that operation. So, again, if you have any questions after this and you want to speak to me about it, I please encourage you to do that, and hopefully that someday we'll get back here again and we'll get a chance to vote on the bill.
Representative Anderson, thank you so much. Thank you to all the testifiers for being respectful, and thank you for the testimony. Again, provide that information that we asked for. This was information only. I've requested that, and I know a number of members on the committee asked for that as well, so that we can become as educated as we possibly can. Representative Anderson, you know how to pack a room. We appreciated that. The children were fantastic. We enjoyed that as well. So with that, thank you so much, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think what we'll do, members, is we'll take a five-minute recess, and we'll pick up Representative Anderson's bill. So we're on recess until straight up 4 o'clock.
This guy's maybe upset.
Thank you, sir.
I laid it out. Are we done?
We are.
You're going to scrape it.
We are.
Good job. How much? Our stuff.
All of the stuff I recorded.
I fully expected to be so forever.
Thank you. That's a lot of stuff. This has the
financial stuff. I was, we were the American on
The bureaucratic quality.
Yes. Yes. So, different. Okay.
Four.
No, is it the written testimony? Or points of their testimony? We'll take care of this.
Court, right?
And
sworn.
Ah! There you go. Right?
Well, no, that was supposed to be. But it is
going to take it. Just place on the camera. So, you'll probably
go.
There you go.
Yeah, it wasn't good for it.
I've never seen it before.
Well, I said, I'm a computer scientist. So, I do this. I use my application.
What time is the clock is starting?
You've got some people that are interested in testifying, sign up now, or?
It's not.
Okay.
This is a different, I want to do with a different computer. I'm not sure where this person is.
Yeah, I know. Put them on the list. I'll not get to them.
I know that you live in the testifying.
You're for the bill, right?
Hey, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Hey, did you sign my picture?
Yes, I did. You won't be able to read it.
Hey, I'm Dave Lusky.
Gentlemen?
Okay. L-U-S-T-Y. That's T-1.
Can I help you with the test fire? We've got to do it in silo. Can I keep it flowing and stuff like that?
I don't know who you're down
with. I'm
Phil Brace. I think you'll be down. All right, gentlemen.
I'd like to get on that plane.
I don't know if you're here for the first meeting. Let's be up. We're doing
I'd like, yeah, Jeff Riesbeth, R-I-E-S-G-R-A-F.
Someone gets with you, it means that they're going to hunt down somebody on the same side of the
How many total minutes are you taking test prior to this?
We have 40 minutes on both sides. 40 minutes on both sides.
How many people do you have talking on each side?
We have
14 minutes. I wonder if Waze isn't done yet. I doubt it.
The other thing is, one of you gentlemen, another one, I was the biggest one today.
Starts again.
We have a
lot
Before I sit down,
you kept on questioning it, you know, from the last one, selling out and stuff that they were drinking from. My grandpa is from Norway. And when we were kids growing up, my mom, they would put milk out there, sour, and she'd add a little sugar, and then you would dip it with bread, and you would eat it. So, yeah, it...
I don't know.
I like fresh milk. I wasn't Norwegian enough.
Members will call the meeting back to order. Next on the agenda, we have Representative Bruce Anderson. And I'd like to remind everybody, once again, this is an information-only meeting. And so the topic is stray voltage. We have individuals, the way we're going to lay this out is identical to the last series of testifiers with the raw milk piece. We are starting, and we're going to go till, let's see, four, where are we going, Joe? We're going to be done at, okay. We're going to run equal amount of testimony on both sides of this issue. So once we get to that break point, we're going to switch. And for people that are pro Representative Anderson's bill, we're going to stop. And we're going to go to the opposing side, if you will, individuals that have concerns with that as well. We will adjourn. And what I'd like to say, to, like I said to the last group, please be respectful to individuals when they're up giving their testimony. Hold your applause, hold your cheering. Like I said before, my mom always said, don't hate the opposition, but respect them, for they too are standing up for what they believe in. So I ask that we all be respectful. In the event the testifier right before you said what you're going to say, simply just say, I agree with what that individual said, and there's no need to repeat that. Again, I just ask that everybody be respectful to the testifiers. And with that, the other thing is I know there's a number of committee meetings that's taking place right now, and so you'll have members that will be bouncing in and out of here, whether it's another committee meeting or a conference committee, and they need no disrespect. There's just multiple things going on. And if you have anything that you would like to submit in writing or your testimony in writing, I will read it, and we'll make sure that everybody receives that as well, all the other members that serve on the committee. And again, we'll make sure everybody has that information. Representative Anderson, welcome, and to the issue.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 1157 comes to the committee, as you've already mentioned, as an informational hearing only regarding this. But I was made aware of this by my constituent, who will be speaking at his turn, whenever that is, regarding his situation on his dairy farm in Wright County, just outside between Waverly and Howard Lake. But the intent of the Bill 1157 is intended to require that the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission appoint an advisory task force that would need to propose legislation laying out how a utility company is to investigate and address concerns over stray. And I shows voltage in here, but as I've met with so many people regarding this, that voltage is a misnomer, and I'd like members to realize that it's not voltage that kills cows or pigs or animals or human beings, it's current. And so I think we need to re-correct that language and say stray current. And this legislation would need to include a number of provisions, including uniform complaint
form that all utilities must use, a comprehensive definition of stray current, addressing customer concerns, protocol for on-site investigations, specificity, anyway, towards the timing of the testing, spending enough time and accounting for peak daily demand of the customer and the utility, and laying out a process for addressing the situation of stray current as it pertains to the customer. I'm not going to spend a lot of time because I know there's lots of people that have called up and told my legislative assistant that they would like to testify, and you probably have those names. But I would like to mention that I had a gentleman, a professor from Morehead College, Mr. Dwayne Dahlberg, who showed up last week thinking that the hearing was going to be heard on Wednesday last week. Professor Dahlberg had some grave concerns. He's been working on this situation since back in the 80s and 90s, and he was on the university staff at one time dealing with stray current. And basically he made mention and told me that if anything that could happen, as he wanted to lend a solution, he said the solution to electrical pollution, he calls it electrical pollution rather than stray current, is to get the electricity out of the ground, meaning that no grounding of electrical infrastructure to the ground will help in mitigating the situation on farms and places where human beings have been unduly harmed by this issue, and he would like to pass that on. And I also had, just to pass this on, a gentleman, a consultant from California, who had flown in specifically for this hearing last week, and so I spent quite a bit of time with him along with that. So he had the same concerns, and he would like to pass on the same results or concerns there regarding the stray current. And Mr. Chair, members, I'm supposed to be in Ways and Means, and I told him I'd be gone just a little bit of time, and then so I'll, if you need me, that's where I'm going to be, because I'm going to head back up there and they need votes. So,
well, Representative Anderson, send him my best wishes. I'm supposed to be there as well.
I understand.
Representative Anderson, what I would like to do as far as the testifiers, I'd like to start with your constituents. I know that early on in session, you brought that to my attention, to our attention. And if that individual is willing to lead us off, that's who I'd like to call upon first.
My constituent is Harlan Popper from Waverly, Minnesota.
Mr. Popper, if you wouldn't mind starting us off, please state your name for the record and begin.
I'm Harlan Popper. I run a dairy near Waverly, Minnesota. We've been dealing with stray voltage on our farm since 2006. We've had light bulbs, numerous motors, issues that went on. We've called our utility, contacted them. In the fall of 2008, they had told me that the issue was the wiring on my farm. We redid the wiring on our farm with no change in the cow behavior, cows dying. I have a wife and four children at home, and we are putting cows down in front of them. These are animals I'm in care of, and I'm having to shoot them because of what's being caused by their stray voltage. We put isolation transformers in. The situation has gotten better. We lifted the ground rods, made them lift the ground rods on their power line, and along with the isolation transformers, the situation was getting better. On January 17th, they have reconnected the ground rods on the power line to hold themselves, quote unquote, to a higher standard, and this is what is happening in my facility.
Mr. Poplar, are we going to show an overhead?
A video of a cow standing in my parlor being milked.
Okay, if we could get some help by staff to get that fired up for us. Here comes Michael.
This is a cow being milked in my parlor. The milker is attached to this animal. There's nobody near this cow except the milker hanging underneath her. What I want you to do is watch that cow, what she does as she's standing in that parlor.
Mr. Poplar, it looks like a rather newer facility, modern facility.
It was put up in 99.
90, okay.
Look at that cow. Look around to see what's happening. Watch her sniff that pole. That cow got shocked. I have a oscilloscope in the barn that is monitoring the current that's flowing through those parlor stalls. And at the time that that cow wants to get out of that stall and does that, we have a spike of electricity that has come through that barn at the exact same time that cow is doing that. Exactly. Now we'll go to some, if you've got a weak stomach, you're probably not going to like these pictures a whole lot. I'm going to put a picture up here.
And to the individuals in the audience, I have not seen these. I've not reviewed these. I don't know if there's...
That is a cow that is 200 days in milk, carrying a calf for 3 months. We've been doing this since January 17th, since they've reconnected the ground rods back on their line. This cow was shot and put down in my yard for my wife and 4 children to see, and all of my hired men. This is what I deal with on a daily basis since they've connected their grounding. I've got cows that we are cutting for DAs in the year of 2010 when the grounds were lifted and the isolation transformers were in place. We cut a grand total of 4 cows for DAs. Every cow lived. Since they have connected the grounds back up, we have done 7 DA surgeries. I've shot 2 of the animals, and I've had to put 3 on a trailer that never pulled out of their surgery. At the rate this is going, we are going to be back on a 30-plus DA surgeries like we were before the grounding was lifted and the isolation transformers were put in place. They claim that transients do not hurt cows. You've seen that cow in that parlor stall go absolutely nuts with nobody touching her, just standing there with a milker on. This animal, how would you people feel if this was your livelihood in front of you being destroyed because nobody wants to do research and find out what's actually going on with these cows nowadays rather than what was going on with them 20 years ago? Cows have changed. Facilities have changed. But we use research that's been done 20 to 30 years ago. We need research done. We need reputable research done, not paid by a utility to a university to get information that sides with what they want it to say instead of what's actually happening with these cows and what's affecting these animals. And this is pretty disheartening for me to sit here and watch this.
Okay. So, thank you. Do you have any additional pictures to show or anything like that?
Well, I've got all kinds of pictures, but like I said, this will tell you what's going on.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your testimony. We're going to save questions to the end. Next, we will call up Mr. Bird, Mr. Charlie Bird,
right?
And Mr. Mailer. Would you like to come up together, or?
Actually, Mr. Bird had to leave.
Okay.
Meeting in Brainerd, so my name's Will Mahler.
Mahler, okay.
Yeah, Will Mahler, and so may I'll take over for Charlie. But I'm a lawyer from Rochester. I currently am representing several farmers on stray current litigation throughout Minnesota, and I support the bill because it's necessary. Most farmers cannot afford to take on a power company to finally get their attention. It costs $100,000 to $200,000 to pursue one of these claims. So if there's a procedure in place where power companies were required to investigate stray voltage complaints, and that would be very helpful and correct the problem. I do have some suggestions to the bill, but I don't know if that's before this committee now in its present form. I think we need a couple more. We should have 2 electrical engineers who have served as consultants in these cases, one from each side, so we don't get a bias.
And Mr. Mahler, that's actually helpful because, again, this is information hearing on this, and we're trying to become as educated as we possibly can. So we're looking at hearing testimony on all sides of this issue. So if you have recommendations specific, those are helpful as well. And just to remind the testifiers, we are going to have a hard break just like the last one as well. So
that would just be one suggestion. I think we should have two master electricians that have also been involved, one for each side. They're the ones that actually go out and test on the farms. I think it would be a good idea to have two attorneys on the panel. Mr. Bird would be an excellent selection for that, one from each side, again, to help marshal all the evidence that is generated in connection with this issue. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we'll just go right down the list, if that's okay. Next down the list, we have Mr. Kenning. Mr. Kenning. You got bumped to the top, my friend. Please state your name for the record and begin.
I'm Joe Kenning from St. Cloud area.
Welcome.
And we have a bad, it's an electrical current in the ground too. It's very serious out at our place. And I suppose I should give you a little bit of information. We are living between two substations. They're about 8 miles away apart. And we got a transmission line, 115,000, that runs past our place. They moved it, but the grounding is still follows a straight line, which would go right through our yard. And we fought this here problem since 1950, and never. It took us 30 years to catch on. Hey, we got electrical problem. And 1979 is when I started looking at. We had so many dead animals, the vet bills, and the hogs. We used to put on it there in 4.5 months' time back in the 1940s. And in the 70s, it was getting up to 14 and 16 months to do the same thing. And that's how it all, everything was going. And mastitis, back in the 40s, we didn't even know what mastitis was. And we had it so bad. I give the veterinary system $10,000 back in 93 to help us on this issue. And we actually ended up selling the dairy herd. We are at 2 million on a cell count. And I find out this cell count, when they put in an isolation transformer, they look at your cell count. They don't look at the stray voltage in the ground. They use that the cell count. They look at that. If it's over 300,000, then they'll put an isolator in. Below that, they won't. And we built a brand new milking parlor, my boy did. And we started milking it. We put that in September 6th. We started milking in there of 2004. And when we started there, by the end of September, my heart was giving me trouble. I passed out by the calves, and I went into St. Cloud Hospital for 2 full days with all their heart equipment. When I left there, they said, you're in such good shape, they said, you don't even have to see a doctor. And all the way through October, November, December, and January, my heart was stopping every day. How I know it, I didn't realize it was my heart stopping. My brain ran out of oxygen. And this happened in the hospital when they were running ultrasound. That was February 4th of 2005. And I went in there because I fell over. I only fell over twice out of this 50 times. Otherwise, I pulled through it without, it always started back up. But anyway, I fell over on the 3rd at home. So they said, you're going in the hospital. So I went in there. And they admitted me that night. At 3 o'clock in the morning, my heart stopped for 12 seconds. That's recorded with the nurses come running in my room. Then they took me down to intensive care. Then they run ultrasound on my heart about 8:30. And all at once that nurse jumped to the side, and all the nurses come running in there, and I didn't know what was happening. Then my brain ran out of oxygen. I told the nurse, get out of the way. I said, I got to get out of bed. I said, this happened over 50 times at home. They said, no way. You're going for that operating room as quick as we can get you there.
And they said, you've got a perfect heart. And that was straight voltage?
That's the electrical current, yes.
Or the straight current?
Okay. Then they put a pacemaker and a defibrillator in there. And that's an $87,000 machine. And when I go into that equal potential plane in that barn, I use that this pacemaker up to 98% of the time. When I got out of there, it dropped down to about 5 to 10% when I'm out of there. This is all recorded in the St. Cloud Hospital. My dad, he helped in our other parlor there too, and he actually had his leg amputated. That was in 91 because it busted wide open. And it hurt so bad. What amazed me the most is that we had Dad in a house, on a bed, mind you, close to the wall. There was a concrete floor outside. His leg hurt, that open wound hurt so bad. He took the pillow from one end of the bed to the other. Then when I know how bad his electricity is, we took him and moved him to the other side of the room in that house. Dad said, you know, my leg don't hurt over here like it does over there. He said, get a meter. He said, I want to see this. I said, Dad, there is no meter that'll show this. This is the radiation. And when you look at the Earth's magnetic field, we all live in it. It's a DC current that pulls in one direction at all times. These fields are so strong, they go in the atmosphere 50,000 feet and better. That's 10 miles. And it actually holds the air down here and everything, the magnetic field. Okay, as DC is pulling this way, what we're putting in the ground is alternating magnetic field. It would, like if this Earth was alternating, it would kill everything on this Earth within a quarter of a second. That's where the big problem is, the cycling of the electrical magnetic field. And really you can't check real good for it, because one of the problems is these currents going through the ground. It's like you want to put a meter around, you got to run one wire through that meter, you can read the amperage. You run both wires through, it'll tell you there's zero going through there, because it's going both ways. When the power company puts all three phases in the ground, it's going all directions, and you cannot read totally what's in the ground, but I am picking it up. I put ground stakes over 2,000 feet apart, and I go to work and use an ammeter around one wire. So at times, there's only one field is a lot stronger, and I'm picking up sometimes as high as, I actually picked up over one amp going through the ground.
Mr. Kenny, could you wrap up your testimony? Just a couple of minutes. We have a lot of people who would like to talk today. Thank you.
This is what I'm complaining about. We need people, you people up here, and promote something that we can get people out there to monitor this stuff, the ground current, not the voltage. Voltage don't tell you nothing. And I'm losing my farm almost because I had it bought and paid for, but with this here, we lost so many animals that it's gone. I guess I could talk for hours on this here, but
we'd like to hear you, but we have to move along too. Okay. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for leaving.
Okay. Next testifier is Mr. Larry Dreyer. Is Mr. Dreyer here? Okay, here he comes. Welcome, sir, and identify yourself for the record, please, as you sit down to testify.
Hi. Yes, my name is Larry Dreyer, farm in Carver County. I used to have a herd average about 10 years ago. It was about 24,000 pounds of milk. In that time, since then, we've made lots of improvements, tunnel ventilation, sand to improve cow health, cow comfort, mats in the parlor, dairy comp, we trim feet. I think we do overall do a nice job of managing. Is it the exceptional? Maybe not, but at that time I think we were about the top 10% in the state, if I remember right. We had a lot, genetics, I think we're fine. We actually purchased a lot. We probably had 70 embryos that we had put in, that type of thing. That's a little bit for the introduction. Last thing in the introduction, and actually today is my birthday. I'm turned 55. Right here, something else had a birthday here on our farm, and that's the wires that we have. They're 77 years old. When we first started milking, they're put on the farm. It's not right to the day where my dad says we should be real close at that. 77 years ago, we didn't have much more than light bulbs in the farm. Now we run, we had a couple 600 and 800 amp services. We've gone from, at that time, a couple cows to 230 cows to a couple thousand acres. We have 30 horsepower dryer fans, grain facilities along with the parlor and that sort of thing. So that tells us a little bit again about ourselves with the wiring. 3 years ago things really got hectic. We actually went to work. Our parlor was very old. We completely gutted it out. We put in a new parlor, milked outside for a couple of weeks. We put in about 8,500 pounds of steel into the parlor. Things immediately kind of went south. And when I say immediately, it didn't get any better. It kept getting worse and worse. Really, when we look back, what we did is we created a better ground, for the on our farm than what we could take off the farm, especially with the older wires in there. And this is my theory, opinion. I think we have some guys that we have done some testing that would agree with that. It needed to be replaced after lots of challenges and stuff with the power company. And we have been working with Excel. I've got some really good things to see with them. They have people hired just to do the testing and that, a guy, and the guy's excellent. One of the issues that they have is, I don't know if they're always buying into what they're doing. Wow. What Will Mahler had said before, I think he's right on with what he had talked about that. Real quickly, I want to go through, I'll be as brief as we can, as I can. I take on 230 cows, it takes 5,000 pounds of milk a year. That's approximately what we lost, and I think I'm being conservative because I think we should be higher than that by now. By the way, we are in the bottom 10% now for profitability. Top 10% for production 10 years ago, now bottom 10%. It almost makes me want to cry where we've gone to.
Mr. Dreyer, excuse me just a second. We have to move to a different room. There's going to be another meeting in here right now at 4:30, yeah. So we're going to be moving just down the hall here to room number 5, just across the hall to room number 5, so we'll reconvene and come back immediately in room 5, just across the hall. Thank you very much, everybody.
We'll reconvene the informational hearing and continue on. Wrapping up will be Mr. Dreyer. Go ahead, Mr. Dreyer.
As I was stating, I was talking some real quick values. At 5,000 pounds of milk a day and 230 cows, it comes out, even at $15 milk, it comes a little over $500,000 in a given year. Preg rate, I don't know how familiar you are with it, but we were as low as single digits. We're down to 9. We're down, breed average or state average is 15. We're finally back to about 16. We have seen some improvement as we made some small corrections. That comes to over 40,000. Somatic cell count, taking us where we're actually costing us right now, we'd gain about $28,000, taken back to where we were prior. I'm just trying to give you some numbers that what this has cost us. Labor, it's been a full-time for me, a half-time job just for me dealing with this. Sick cows, being here, on and on. Excuse me. The vet bills. One of the things that Harlan had pointed out before was the immune systems. I do believe that's what he has pointed out, immune systems. That's what we're doing to these cows, that we're screwing up the immune system in these cows. I would like to go more detail, don't have time. I have a couple bullets or just a couple thoughts that I want. One thing I really wish this committee would maybe look at is the use of blockers, the type of blockers they're using. If this committee was to do something, there's supposedly the blocker we're using. We have two of them on our farm. There is leakage going. There is leakage on them. We've shown that they're not totally effective. As Chuck Huntie would probably say, we're looking for total isolation. I do not, the legislation that's out there, this is all handled on a case-by-case between the power companies and the dairy farmers. You can't expect, like they said before, the attorney had said before, the other thing, accountability. I just see the lack of it sometimes from the power companies. I do see them working well a little bit with us, but when it comes right down to it, they lack that. Four-wire systems, I think, are a must. I think I'm going to skip by a few things here. I think we really need the University of Minnesota or some universities involved in this. Seems like they've turned their head to it. They're not even aware what's going on. I really wish they'd get involved and set some of the other stuff aside. VFD drives. There have been lots of issues with them. A variable frequency drive. I think they should be checked out, too. I'm running too long here already. This has been a 10 or 20-year thing going way back. I think we've had some issues, a couple personal things that we've had mentally. It's been really hard. I've never had high blood pressure. I've actually had to deal with some minor depression issues. Family health. Our family, actually, our house at 500 to even 800 milliamps of in the house, which we never tested. We were focusing on the barns. My wife, all of us had some minor issues. She particularly would cough around the clock, and literally to the point of vomiting. And it's ironic when we put 27 ground rods in there to take care of this. Granted, she went to the doctor at the same time. All three of us that were my smallest daughter that's home at the time, issues went away in a week to 2 weeks. And she'd been dealing, my wife had been dealing for this for 3 years already. Thank you so much for your time. I do hope that we can get to this end very soon.
Mr. Dreyer, we do have a question. I believe Representative Morrow, do you have a question to the testifier? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, I really want to follow your protocol. If you'd like to wait till all the pro testimony, I certainly can wait till then.
I think what we're going to do, initially we're going to have a hard break at 4:40, but because of moving to rooms, we're going to extend this for 10 more minutes on this side of it, so that would be 4:50. At that point in time, how about we take questions, and then we'll roll to the individuals on the opposing view. And so there are going to be testifiers that will not testify because of the earlier, the length of time on earlier testimony, similar to what was discussed on the raw milk testimony. So, thank you, Representative Morrow. We'll hold that question. We're going to continue taking testimony, up until 4:50. Thank you, Mr. Dreyer. I'd like to call next on the list, Mr. John, is it Kestelman? Did I pronounce that correctly? Is John here? Okay. How about Ms. Lois Thielen? Ms. Lois Thielen? Thielen? I'm sorry. And thank you for correcting me on the names as well. My apologies. Ms. Thielen, please state your name for the record and begin.
My name is Lois Thielen, and I'm Ms. I'm married to John. We just have different last names.
Okay. Thank you. So your testimony, please.
We have been farming for 23 years north in Gray Eagle. We have about 400 acres, and we, until last week, had 91 milk cows, or about 95 milk cows. We sold the cows last week. We're kind of taking a break right now to see what's going to happen next. We didn't have a lot of problems until about 2000, when two other farmers quit milking in our neighborhood, and we seem to have a lot more health problems. We have tremendous somatic cell issue. we had, we just had a whole host of problems we never had before with the cows. You know, I thought we ran, you know, a pretty good operation. The animals were healthy, they were clean. Other people commented on that. But now, you know, we've just had a lot of problems. Our total production way down. In fact, in the year 2003, it got so bad that we were averaging over a million for somatic cell. We were on and off the market. You know, well, we were threatened with being taken off the market on a fairly constant basis. So at the end of 2003, we sold all the cows, and we took one of those, you know, periods where we just kind of reevaluated and tried to figure out what to do next. And then we started with younger animals because we had a lot of young stock. We started in milky again, and things were better for a time. But then we started accelerating again, and by about 2008, the somatic cell was absolutely horrendous. The health problems, the things like having the DAs, the displaced stomachs, we were having surgery of those that say at least one a week for a while. In fact, we have two in one day once. Last year, we got to the point when we realized we had to do something, so we hired a consultant and we redid all the wiring on the farm. We made some additions, we fixed a lot of things, but we basically took the advice of the consultant and did a lot of preventative stuff. And that helped with a lot of the health problems, and it helped with just, you know, just overall how things were going. The somatic cell dropped by half. It still has a drop to where it should be. The biggest problem, though, was no matter what we did, no matter how many nutritionists we talked to, how many veterinaries we consulted with, no matter how much work we had done with that wiring, we could never get the cow's milk production up to where it should be. So I would have to agree with the previous person that we are losing a lot of money. Have lost a lot of money because we just can't get the cows to produce the way they probably would have 10, 15 years ago. So we still say there's a lot of spray voltage going on, especially since we are located at the end of the line. There's three of us at the end of the line, and we're out by a substation, and there's just a lot of the spray voltage still circling around out there.
Ms. Thielen, Mr. Poplar, he had, in his testimony, he was talking about he has done extensive testing on his farm.
Mm-hmm.
Were you doing similar amount of testing on your farm as well?
We've had all kinds of testing. We have had testing by the power company on numerous occasions. We have also had testing done by two or three different consultants. So we have really researched this thing.
And the other question, we've had a couple of testifiers that asked for I believe I heard them right, additional research, whether it's third party, University of Minnesota or else. Would you support something like that as well so that we understand this better?
I think I would rather like to see something done so that there are some rules, some regulations put in place so that power companies have to provide a safe product, that power companies have some rules to follow, that they can't just continue to do whatever they want and dump their spray voltage in the backyard. You know, we really, there's nothing in place at all to regulate power companies. And as Mr. Popper pointed out earlier, we simply can, you know, most farmers would never afford to do a lawsuit. Their problem with a lawsuit is even if you have that kind of money, it could be immediately overturned again. Power companies have much more money than we do. They could just start all over again and do this indefinitely.
Okay. Do you have anything else to add for your testimony?
I guess my main concern is I would just like to see something put in place so that there's actually some boundaries, some rules that power companies have to follow. And right now I feel a Public Utilities Commission is just a rubber stamp that really serves no purpose as it is.
Okay. Thank you. And is this your husband?
Yes. That's the only thing is that last
please state your name for the record and speak into the mic if you would, please.
Okay. Like the guy said, the first guy came and did all the testing and stuff like that.
Yes, sir.
We can protect ourselves coming through a line, but we cannot do anything with the ground current on our farm. The power company has to do that, and so far they have refused to do anything. We get like 0.4 ground current coming in. And when we sold our cows last week, I went and looked at them in the sales barn 3 hours later. They were walking so much better in the sales barn than they were at my farm. It's hard to recognize some of them.
So, and how long have you been farming, or excuse me, milking cows?
We were milking cows in that farm 23 years,
23.
And I milked cows 8 years before that.
And you sold them all now?
You know.
That's what you said? Yeah. Okay.
Power company should be somewhat responsible for what they're doing to us.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Next, I would like to bring up, Mr. Dave Buck.
He's not here.
He's not here? Okay. We will move to Mr. Nick Kunkel? Not here? Okay. Let me do this. Mr. Phil Braze? Mr. Phil Braze.
Hi, Phil Braze.
Hi. Welcome to the committee, and speak into the mic, if you would, please, and begin your testimony.
First off, we have so much current or stray voltage coming through our place that when we order these mineral bottles and leave them sit on the shelf, you open them up and you touch them, more often than not, you will get a shock. This becomes a Linden jar. Okay, concerning animals, during the wet weather, animals start dying. Animals periodically die under the power lines, especially when they are calving. We need to feed extra amounts of minerals in order to keep the animals healthy. We were told that the animal system runs like a battery, and when you use extra minerals, it holds their immune system up. This we got from Dr. Herman from the CDC. Calves don't know when they're full. You can give them milk, their stomachs will just get big. We move them to another farm, you give them milk, they know when they're full. After a thunderstorm, animals temporarily forget where their feed is. Cats only grow to about two-thirds of normal size by the third generation. Animals will simply lay down and die in front of you. We need extra strong fencers for our electric fencers to keep the animals in. Some fences we don't hook up. We've got a pasture out there, and we have wires that have no fencer connected to them. And if we don't wear rubber gloves, it'll set you on your can. The power company doesn't care. They just say, well, it happens sometimes. Metal objects become magnetized when you bring them to our place. They get a north and a south pole. Bring metal objects to our place, and they will become magnetized. One electrician ran a scope on our property. Our water lines carried electricity even while our power was off. There was current on the lines. The natural gas company put in a plastic pipe to our place in order to protect us from their DC current, the cathode protection, and then at least we didn't get shocks when we were washing dishes. When our children grew up, my wife was nursing. When the cows were down in milk production, my wife was also having less milk, and with every baby, she dried up earlier. Very similar situation with our cows. We produce our own electricity with generators. The power company refuses to sell us electricity. We did an experiment to run generators for several generations, and then we said, okay, now you're going to give us power back again, and we're going to see what happens to our cattle. They said it was too dangerous to sell us power, so they have refused. Okay, when we buy detergents in plastic barrels, the detergent precipitates out. We had a young man living with us, went to school, and he ended up with a heart condition in his teenage years. Took him up, did Mayo clinic, had a monitor on him, so on and so forth. His heart wouldn't do the beats right. He went back home, his heart was totally fine. My wife went into early menopause. We left the place for several months to bring her cycling back again. My daughter, we have one girl, we sent her from the time she was 4 months off the place to keep her health up. Every time she flew back and came to us, we don't know what was happening. From the time she was 5 years old, her breasts would enlarge, and then they'd shrink back down again, and then she would leave. And when she came back, this was a normal thing that happened. Batteries go dead on our place. the DA problems. We had a pile of cows. We had to feed different. We do a lot of things different now. We don't have the DA problem, and that's simply because we virtually give them no corn. We give oats, wheat, barley. We're managing for electricity instead of managing for milk production. We're managing to keep the cows alive, and production is $11,000, $12,000 pounds of milk. We used to have a 20-some thousand pound herd average. My parents both had the same rare kidney condition. They're not genetically related at all. Periodically, our cats die, and when the big main power lines were put in our place, my grandma came down with schizophrenia. Within 2 years, she was normal again. Everything was fine until we built the new dairy addition. They buried the power lines, or not the power lines, the power coming up to our place was put underground. 30-some years later, all of a sudden she came down with schizophrenia again. Mayo Clinic said, that's impossible. You don't get it without medication. Have it go away, come back again. They said something else was causing it. She had a totally fine working heart. Everything was fine. She was going in and out of the doctor. She came on the place, tipped over dead with a heart attack, same as our cattle do. That's it.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and I wish your family the very best. Sorry to hear about the challenges that you've had. We are going to move members to, it is 10 till. We're going to move to the opposing side of the bill. Mr. Douglas, Dr. Douglas, is it Reinemann? Get that right? Or please state your name for the record and begin, if you would, please.
Yeah, my name is Doug Reinemann.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a professor of biological systems engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and also secretary of the Midwest Rural Energy Council.
Welcome.
And I'm speaking neither for or against the bill, but strictly for information to represent the research community and also some of the other public reviews of this issue.
Thank you.
I've been on the faculty at the University of Wisconsin for 21 years, during which time stray voltage has been a major part of my research and extension work. The stray voltage research that I have done was funded by the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture and the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. As part of my extension appointment at the University of Wisconsin, I am secretary of the Midwest Rural Energy Council, or MREC, an organization made up of land-grant universities, Wisconsin, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, rural electric power suppliers, and other energy service providers. The MREC furthers the mission of university extension services to provide research-based information to farmers and their energy service providers, and its website, MREC.org, provides a wealth of information on subjects relating to farm wiring, utility wiring systems, stray voltage research and testing, renewable energy, energy conservation, and other farm energy issues. The summary points I'd like to bring to the attention of the committee are, number one, the electrical system, both electrical production, distribution, and use, is well understood. The sources of voltage and current are well known and include sources from both utility and farm wiring systems. Field experience in Wisconsin has indicated that on-farm sources of stray voltage due to problems with farm wiring are more common than utility sources. Therefore, both wiring systems must be assessed to properly deal with stray voltage issues. Investigative techniques are well developed and practiced by utility companies all around the country. The University of Wisconsin, the MREC, and the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin have coordinated a training course on stray voltage investigation for the past 20 years, which has been attended by more than 1,000 stray voltage investigators. The second major point is that the effects of electrical exposure on farm animals is also well understood. The effects of stray voltage on farm animals has been a subject of research for over 50 years. While voltage is the main field measurement at animal contact locations, the current passing through an animal is the cause of response. Earth currents are a normal consequence of electrical power use, but do not make a substantial contribution to the current flow through animals. The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission assembled a team of science advisors who spent 4 years investigating the subject of earth currents. Their conclusions, which I have attached in full to my submission, indicate that there was no credible scientific evidence to verify the specific claim that currents in the earth are causes of poor health and milk production in dairy herds. Similar studies and regulatory reviews were performed in Wisconsin and reached the same conclusion. The scientific research and, I would say, our investigative techniques have been validated by the results of over 9,000 stray voltage investigations on farms in Wisconsin. That's all.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. And access to that information, can we go online?
Certainly.
Could you provide that to us?
Yes.
At some point in time.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, Mr. Chuck DiNardo. Did I get that right?
That's right.
All right. Thank you. Please state your name for the record and who you represent and begin, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Chuck DiNardo, and I presently chair the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers Working Group on Stray and Contact Voltage. The IEEE, as it's commonly called, is a standards-making organization with 400,000 engineering members in 160 countries. There are 38 societies within the IEEE, and the Stray and Contact Voltage Working Group is attached to the Distribution Subcommittee of the Power and Energy Society. One of my other hats is I am currently the treasurer of the Midwest Rural Energy Council that Dr. Reinemann just spoke about. And because I know a number of the engineers from Minnesota, they asked me to appear here as chair of the IEEE working group and testify today about the topic of earth current because of the concern is about earth current is one of the primary reasons that we're here today. The Stray and Contact Voltage Working Group that I chair has been charged with creating a guide that will help dispel some of the misinformation that surrounds this topic. There are more than 200 individuals on our mailing list, and these participants represent utilities, electrical consulting firms, regulatory authorities, electrical research organizations, and several universities. The working group has a website that contains our working documents and a number of presentations that may be useful to this committee, and I've included a printout of the home page of that website in a couple of the documents that I've provided to you. And would encourage anyone with an interest in this topic to visit that website. There's a lot of good information there. My testimony today will be brief. I've listed in very general terms a number of items that are crucial to an understanding of earth current. I won't try to put you to sleep with a lot of technical detail, but I would like to go through some of these points. And please stop me if I'm not clear, or if you want me to get into a little more technical detail, I'd be happy to do so. I'm here to answer your questions.
Thank you.
You should have this sheet, I think, that says earth current at the top of it, and that's what I'm going to be working with here.
Okay.
These are just some of the important points that may help you understand this question of earth current. From the section that's titled, Where Does Earth Current Come From?, a couple of very interesting points. The presence of utility and customer-sourced earth current is inevitable. Utilities cannot deliver, and customers cannot use electricity without creating some earth current. Earth current is no different than any other electrical current. It obeys the same physical laws. Under the topic, why is the earth a part of the electrical circuit? To ensure safety, electrical systems are connected to the earth. As a result, small currents from customer and utility systems enter and flow in the earth. This current is not a mystery. It is a result of the safety grounding that is designed into the system. Under the topic or the heading, how is earth current related to stray voltage? The flow of current in the earth results in an earth surface voltage. A dairy cow cannot be exposed to the current that is in the earth, but it can be exposed to the earth surface voltage created by the earth current. The scientific consensus on this type of electrical exposure is clear. an earth surface voltage exposure, that is a voltage exposure caused by the presence of earth current, is no different than a traditional stray voltage exposure. As with stray voltage, there can be no harm below a level of perception. A cow must feel the voltage in order to be negatively affected by it. Under the heading, does a stray voltage investigation address earth current concerns? The amount of earth current present cannot be measured directly, but it can be easily quantified by measuring the earth surface voltage that it creates. If you measure the earth surface voltage between two points on a barn floor, for instance, that are 6 feet apart, the step distance of a cow, you are measuring the earth current exposure voltage. Earth current is a well-understood electrical phenomenon. If present on a farm at levels known to be problematic, a standard stray voltage measurement will find it, and a few simple diagnostic measurements will allow the investigator to identify its source. A special or unique earth current investigation protocol is not necessary. If I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so.
I believe what we're going to do is continue with the testifiers, and I know we'd have a series of questions here. The members have agreed to hold off as well, so if you have time to stick around for a little bit longer, just in case, I'd appreciate that.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll bring up Mr. Tim Weir. Please state your name for the record and who you represent, and begin, please.
My name is Tim Weir, and I work for Stearns Electric Cooperative.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me to testify. Just to give you a little background about Stearns Electric Cooperative, we're located in Melrose, Minnesota, which is in the heart of or central part of Minnesota. Our service area encompasses pretty much all of Stearns County. We also cover part of Todd County, the southern part of that, and the southern part of Morrison County. We also touch the eastern edge of Pope County.
Quite a big territory.
Well, it's a pretty good sized territory, but it's really in the heart of the dairy industry. I can't tell you exactly how many dairy farms we serve. Some estimates I've looked at based on some USDA numbers might indicate we have between 800 and 1,000 dairy farms. And if we're at that upper limit, we're probably one out of five dairy farms in Minnesota. So we serve a lot of dairy farms. We're committed to our dairy industry. We have board of directors that have been dairy farmers on our board. Presently, we have two, but in the past, it's usually been more than that. So definitely, we're committed to that industry. My background, I'm a professional engineer. I graduated from the University of Minnesota in 1980. I worked up north for a while in my hometown, which is Tommy Rukavina country, so I hope nobody holds that against me.
We're sorry, all of us. No, I'm just teasing. Representative Rukavina, I have a great deal of respect for him. I'm just teasing.
Actually, Tommy's a pretty good friend of the family. In 1985, I moved down to Stearns Electric, and I joined that team down there. And that was really at the learning curve of the stray voltage. There was still a lot of research being done. I'm proud of the state of Minnesota and the University of Minnesota. Back in those days, they spent a lot of effort pioneering the stray voltage. There are three gentlemen, Bob Appleman, Harold Cloud, and Bob Gustafson. They were researchers from the University of Minnesota. They went out into the field. They figured out that there was a problem when there was a voltage on grounded objects and cows were exposed to those voltages. They didn't have much to go by back then. It probably was one paper from New Zealand that they had, but it was very preliminary back then. That was in the late 70s. And those gentlemen, they didn't have task force, they didn't have focus groups. They went back to the university. They designed research protocols. They shocked a lot of cows, and they figured that thing out. What makes me even more proud is that they got it right the first time around. They did extensive research. Stearns was part of that research. There was one research paper entitled Seasonal Grounding Variations of Distribution Systems, and that's how detailed they got. And we would go out and measure ground rod resistance throughout the year just to determine how the variations in soil resistivity changed based on seasonal frost conditions or dry conditions or moist conditions. So we were part of that. They got it right. The procedures the electrical theories, the mitigation procedures that they came up with still work today. Stern still uses those. Most co-ops in the state of Minnesota still use those. In fact, I'd say all the co-ops in the state of Minnesota use those. The investor-owns use that, and I'd say that's the same procedures that are used across the country. One of the things that they did, which was really good, was when I was a young engineer back then, they came out in the country and they educated the engineers. They went to engineering conferences and they taught us how to investigate for stray voltage, how to test for it, what the levels of concern were, and how to mitigate it. They also went out and taught electricians about stray voltage. They also talked to farmers about stray voltage. So the university did a great job back then. As far as Stearns Electric is concerned, I'll just walk you through the typical protocol that we have. Typically, a farmer will call me because probably has a problem on the farm. And a lot of them recognize that stray voltage is just one piece of this big pie when he comes into the dairy. There's herd management issues that make up various segments of that pie, such as nutrition, milking equipment, and there's a whole host of others. But stray voltage is one of those pieces of the pie. And a lot of them just want to know whether or not they can rule out stray voltage, for it might be a mastitis problem or it might be a production issue. So we'll schedule a test, and I've scheduled over 1,000 of these things in my career, well over 1,000. And we use our line personnel. We've trained them. I would say all of our linemen can probably run a stray voltage investigation, some of them better than others. Some of them are a little bit more passionate than others. But we typically have two investigators from the Melrose office that run most of the tests. We recently graduated a person from Doug Reinemann's school who's been with our investigators on all the investigations within the last year, and he will be our lead investigator in the future. He's one of those people that just likes to do that. He likes the challenge. He likes to solve those problems. So when they run the test, they meet with the farmer, and the farmer is actively involved in all these tests. He's got to be. He's turning on equipment, turning off equipment. He's seeing the results of the test as we're going along. There's voltmeters hanging there. There's a strip chart recorder that's going. So he gets to see everything that's going on. And typically there's some discussion going on out there between the investigator and the farmer. But in the end, they usually bring it back to me. And I sit down with the investigators and I go over everything that they did out there. I then make a phone call to the farmer. If there's recommendations that we see, we make those recommendations. We give them options on how to reduce the levels, and there's options, neutral isolators and things like that. It's pretty standard practice that we try to get farmers to purchase a stray voltage test kit so they can monitor it all the time. And it's just a little package we've put together for $60 that these guys can buy with a set of instructions and all the equipment they need to monitor their own stray voltage. And actually, we've had a lot of success in getting farmers to monitor. I think overall, I'd have to say that all the farmers we have, most of them are satisfied. There are three gentlemen here today that I noticed that are from Stearns Electric, and I know them well because I've been to their farms. There are some that are, we just can't get past it. The levels of concern are below those levels that the University of Minnesota or the USDA manual, wherever you want to go, would say that it's not a problem. But they continue to believe they have a stray voltage problem. So we work with them. There's changes that we've made on the farms. Sometimes it seems to help a little, but it's a difficult situation for us. And typically, I know all the other investigators in Minnesota, and I bet I know every one of them. From Lake Region, Al Fazio, to Al Heyman at Runestone and Todd Medina, Wayne Bauerschmidt, down to Rushford. And then I also know the investor-owned investigators, too, the Otter Tail Power, the Minnesota Power, and NSP, and we network. We We go over, if we each have a problem or we see a situation we just can't figure out, we're on the phone with one another. And we discuss some of these farms that have issues. Joe Kenyon, for example. Joe's been around many, many years. He's been in my office, Joe, how many times? Literally, probably 20, 25 times he's been in my office. And so we do work with these guys. Whether or not rules are going to solve that, I don't have that answer. I just can say that we try to do the best for what we for our farmers.
Thank you, Mr. Weir. We do have a few questions. Representative Morrow, thank you for your patience. To your question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I'm just moving back. I asked the page to pull up something down to the committee, but I've got it online here as well, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I was asking myself why are legal avenues that currently exist not sufficient to address the situation? In other words, what are the challenges that some of the folks who testified found in terms of filing a lawsuit, if that is where things need to go? And I don't know if Representative Anderson, if you can answer this for me, because I really do want to know. For example, there's a 1992 case, which Michael's bringing me right here, Zumbergi versus NSP, in which farmers in Sibley County recovered $1 million for a stray voltage case. And I'm just wondering, the fact that this case exists and the appeal was denied, I'm trying to understand where it is that we have gaps in the present law for allowing farmers who have a claim to recover. So if I could ask Representative Anderson, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm just trying to understand whether this case, if it does not apply anymore, and I could give you more information. Like I say, it was family farmers in Sibley County in Green Isle, and the court said in part, you know, one of the issues was, Representative Anderson, whether electricity is a product or a service. And that's a distinction we may want to talk about later, because that can have implications for negligence cases, nuisance cases, and products liability cases. But I guess my first question is, are you familiar with this Zumbergi case? And is there some reason why this doesn't help address the situation?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I'm not aware of that case.
If I could let you know, thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope I'm saying the name correctly, but the Zumbergis noticed behavioral problems with their herd. The cows were reluctant to eat, failed to conceive, exhibited nervousness in the milk barn, developed leg and hoof problems, showed high levels of mastitis and other, what they then defined it. By 1983, the herd's milk production fell below the statewide average. In 1984, the Zumbergis learned through a Dairy Industry Magazine that stray voltage may have detrimental effects on Dairy Industry Magazine that stray voltage may have detrimental effects on dairy cattle. The farm was tested for stray voltage. The results showed 2.5 volts, a fairly high reading in the dairy barn. And it goes on to say that they were able to recover $1 million for damages. So I'm really not trying to put you on the spot. I just hope that as the discussions go on, and maybe there are folks in the room who already know the answer to this, do we already have a cause of action, if you will, that would allow farmers in this situation to recover?
Representative Anderson, we'd like to respond. Or Representative Morrow, we did have Mr. Mahler, I believe, was an attorney. If he's still, would you like to comment on that?
I would.
Yeah. Move to the front, please.
And Mr. Chair, I do apologize.
Yes, Mr. Mahler.
And Mr. Chair, I do apologize. I had to step out. We have a pension bill up at 6 o'clock for someone who died in my district, so I've been running back and forth. So I apologize. I was out of the room when you spoke earlier.
Well, I didn't address the Zumberg case, but yes, there is a cause of action, and many there are many cases being pending right now alleging negligence. And the negligence theory is on the co-op's failure to maintain, inspect, and operate their lines. And it is a service; it's not a product, and so it's not a product's liability case. But the problem is that it's the power companies put the farmers through the mill in defending these cases. I'm just presently involved in a case that's gone on for 7 years. We went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they slammed the door on the power company. They tried every bobbed and weaved all the way. Now we're back in the trial court. And so it's a long, long, expensive trail. And what the farmers really want is to get the problem fixed so that they can go forward without continuing loss to their herd. But they also, of course, have the right to recover damages for past loss. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah. Representative Morrow, the gentleman that moved up front would like to comment on that.
Oh, please, go ahead. I'll wait.
Please state your name for the record.
I'm Bruce Plates, small dairy farmer from southwest Minnesota. And to answer your question, we've been through stray voltage, and it was estimated that we lost $300,000, which is a lot of money to me, but the lawyer said that's not enough to take your case.
Thank you, Mr. Plates. Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry you're leaving.
Mr. Plate, you might have a question for you, and I'm just going to remind everybody there's another committee in this room. We're going to wrap this up at 20 after sharp, and I want Representative Anderson to have the last.
Then all I'm going to do then is just invite you to talk with Representative Anderson, because there may be other avenues here than doing a task force or what this is. You know, one answer might be, and this would open up a whole can of worms, is to talk about whether electricity is a product or a service. The problems that you're mentioning are the same problems that people who sue medical device makers or manufacturers or others raise. It's so hard to fight them in court. And I just want to be honest with you, I'm not sure if it's a task force that will get you to where you want to be. Whether we have to do something about the liability laws, whether it's negligence, nuisance, products liability, or others, that may get you where you want to go. But I will talk with Representative Anderson because I want to cut my discussion short. But I just want to at least explore that because there at least is some case law on your side.
Mr. Plates, once again, thank you for your testimony. Representative Anderson, any closing comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I have a gentleman that I went to see his farm, Mr. Paul Megadance. I've got some copies here. The gentleman from the Stearns County Electric had been working with him. I'd like to pass these out to the members.
James would help that out.
He, when I went to his farm, was having taken his farm off the electrical completely and going on to a generator. And in the process of being there, I watched the cows. And as I was going through the barn, I watched it.
Excuse me, Mr. Anderson, or Representative Anderson, excuse me, just an announcement. There's a black bag over by the door to the back door. Someone claim that, please. Somebody in here is the owner of that. Please claim it. Security asks that you do so. Representative Anderson, I apologize. Please, once again.
Okay. Thank you. Anyway, while I was there, in the process of the farm being taken off the electricity and going onto a generator, I saw cows that were basically had just gotten there after they had hauled five cows out in a rendering truck. Another cow was, as I was told, was ready to go down. And by the time I did the tour of the farm and came back to the milking parlor, which was about 6 o'clock, I got there about 3. I found that cow was laying out in front, ready to be taken off to the rendering. By 8 o'clock, I was still there, talking it over with the members who had come in, his nutritionist, his veterinarian, many people that were involved with his, and that cow was standing again, basically recovering from the fact that he was no longer being affected by the ground currents that were being affected by the utility. And so I'm very concerned about that, and I think as... In looking at this, Paul Megadance was told by the utility to rewire his farm, and he had people come in and redid the farm, redid the electricity, as many others have, and it's slowly coming back, but it still has a long ways to go. Gentlemen, ladies, I really believe, as Professor Dahlberg had said at the beginning, that we need to get and look at the ground currents that are going through this earth of ours that will take the path of least resistance. And because of our building codes here in the state of Minnesota, other states have looked at building codes. We have a major problem that affects a lot of farmers and people that aren't even here today that could be here to testify. I really think that we need to look at this as a long-range
possibility of resolving them rather than having to send them into the courts and spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to recover, as Mr. Representative Morrow just pointed out in a lawsuit. Others are going through that right now, and I hate to see that, not only for dairy cattle, but hog farmers, animals who are unnecessarily affected. When I first got involved with this, my CA pulled up some disturbing news of human beings who were affected and electrocuted because of stray current, and this was in New Jersey and Delaware and out of the East Coast, and they all have major problems with that. So I'm concerned about this, and I will continue to pursue this as much as possible. And if you have comments and questions after the fact, because we need to be out of here, I would look forward to that.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. You've been a leader on this issue. I respect that. I appreciate it. I want to thank everybody for their testimony and how respectful everybody conducted themselves as well. For the individuals that did not have a chance to testify, please submit your testimony. I will read it. We take this very, very seriously as well. Thank you for your patience. I know this trot out quite lengthy with the floor session debate as well. So thank you so much, everybody. With that, we are adjourned. Oh, excuse me, members. We are not adjourned. I didn't rattle the gavel. We need somebody to approve the minutes.
I move approval of the minutes.
Representative Morrow moves the minutes dated for May 10th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Anything else?
Thank you, guys.
We are adjourned.